Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm a little tired. You know, we had the in-laws and the in-laws' in-laws for the weekend.
Wow.
So I'm not as well rested as I often am on a Monday morning, but all the shrubs got pulled and we got a little yard work done. Not we. They
did.
They got some yard work right. done. You know how it is at my house. I have two tools. Our listeners know this as well, a telephone and a checkbook.
That's it. That's all you need.
But they loaded up their Lexus/tractor. Did you know Lexus, the Lexus 9000 or whatever these guys drive, have the tow hooks in the back?
Did not know that.
And so we made the trip to the Ace Hardware store. We bought the strappy things, and we used the Lexus to pull up the old shrubs, and now it's gorgeous and ready for the holidays.
Cool.
Yeah, so tell us about your soiree over the weekend.
I had a big-time event. I went to the inaugural induction of the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame, which a friend of ours, Mitch Schlemmer, is putting together. He wants to create an Entrepreneur Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, and this was the first celebration for this. And I got to hang out with a lot of the biggest of the big entrepreneurs, from Truett Cathy to Sarah Blakely to... Famous Dave. I got Fred DeLuca, hung out with my son. It was a great event, and they're looking to put a permanent actual Hall of Fame here in Atlanta to celebrate entrepreneurship, and it was a really great event.
You know, typically when I see the word inaugural, that suggests to me we've never done this before.
Yes.
But, we went out and we had a chance to sit down and visit with Mitch. What a guy. This guy's got a lot going on, man.
That's right. He's calling it the Epicenter. It's a place where entrepreneurs are going to come, and it won't be a museum where you just look at pictures of famous people. It's going to be an actual living, breathing thing where entrepreneurs are going to go and learn from other entrepreneurs and plus look at pictures of famous people. You know, entrepreneurs.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to that thing coming together and maybe the opportunity for us to be a part of it in some way.
That's right. No, there's a lot of places for us to participate.
So we got a great show on tap this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to hear from Amy Green with Brown & Company Jewelers. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to invite back to the Business Radio X studio, no stranger to the microphone, with Patents and More, Inc., Mr. Ron Reardon. Welcome to the show, man.
It's good to be here.
Now, Ron, I want to ask you a question. I know you're a patent guy, and this is more, I think, of a trademark thing, but I think you would have an opinion about this. I was mentioning earlier my friend Mitch, who is putting together this Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. The reason it's called the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame is because the word Entrepreneur Hall of Fame they wanted to use, but Entrepreneur Magazine said that they have the only rights for anybody to use the word entrepreneur.
And
you're not allowed to use it without their blessing or write a check or something.
I think if you look up entrepreneur on the trademark website, you'll see that they've got it pretty much corralled.
That's right. So that's why it's called the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame.
That's right. Because a friend of mine, you know, my co-host that when I was here previously, the name of his company was Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing.
Right.
Guess what? He got a cease and desist letter from Entrepreneur saying, take it down. And he looked at fighting it and said, nope, I think I'll change my name to ESM Incorporated or something like that.
And then, but this goes to your day job of Patents and More. Intellectual property is important to protect.
It's very important, yeah. And believe it or not, what I want to talk about today has to do with trademarks.
Okay. So what do you got for us?
Well, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of resources getting on the first page of Google. But once you're on the first page of Google, there's a lot of other competition there. Why will people click on your particular link versus somebody else's?
Right.
And what I've come up with and want to talk about today is how you can come up with both a name, a logo, and a tagline that develops enough intrigue that people were like, I wonder what this is, and they'll do that first click to where you can start engaging them.
And then begin the conversation.
And begin the conversation. Because if what you've got there is kind of bland, the conversation is never going to start. And
right.
All the money that you put into getting on that first page has just been tossed away.
Right.
We need a tagline.
You think?
Don't you think, for Business Radio X?
It's not ready to connect.
Ron, don't you think we need a tagline?
Yes, you do need a tagline.
So how do you go about getting a tagline? You hire a jingle writer? You get everybody in the room together and brainstorm?
Well, there's a lot of different ways you can do that. I think the best thing to do is just get some think time, whether that's in the shower, walking around, or whatever. You know, you mentioned Sarah Bakely being at the event that you talked about, and she was one of the people I wanted to talk about today, because I'm always looking at not only things that are patented, but I also look at things that are trademarked, because that intrigues me.
Right.
And when you look at just the name of her company, Spanx, now you're like, Spanx, with an X.
Correct.
Not KF.
Right.
That was brilliant to start with, just the name of the company, because it might be a contraction of spandex, because she's got slimming clothing.
Right.
But then it also brings up a connotation of something a little naughty, like being spanked.
Right.
Okay. Well, when you look at her tagline on some of her clothing, and this is a registered trademark, both Spanx and this tagline, it says, "Don't worry, we've got your butt covered."
Right.
Okay, that's a brilliant
that's
tagline.
Great. Right.
Now, I don't know how you're going to use something like that for your radio program.
I don't know, but the wheels are turning, Ron.
the wheels are turning. Okay. And I was talking earlier that I'm driving along and I see two men in a truck come by. And I'm like, oh, two men in a truck, that's kind of cute. They got a kind of cute little figures. And then I see their tagline, which is also brilliant. It says, "Movers Who Care." Now, what's the stereotype of movers?
That they don't care.
They really don't care. They're Neanderthals plus gorillas that just toss your stuff around and it gets all messed up. So it's like, I'm not planning on moving anytime soon, but if I do, I would want to go with carrying movers.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, but yeah, you need to put a lot of thought into your name of your company and the logo and the tagline. Another company that interests me is a company called Life Is Good. Have you ever seen?
Oh yeah, yeah. Love the shirts, man.
Their shirts. Their logo is this little stick figure with a beret,
right?
That's always saying life is good. It might be life is good rafting. It might be golfing. It might be hiking. They cover almost all the sports. The only one that I've seen that they've missed is rafting. Okay,
right.
Because I took my sons rafting down the Ocoee River, and I wanted to get some life is good rafting shirts.
And they didn't have any.
They don't have any. So that's a gap.
It's an opening for you.
That's right. That's an opening for them. But you know, the way they came about that is they were selling T-shirts out of the trunk of their car, and things weren't going well. And so finally they regrouped, brought their friends in for kind of a brainstorming session, and they put up there about, you know, five different ideas for T-shirts. And they say, "Which one do you like best?" And like, "You know, that little stick figure with the beret, life is good. Go with that." And they listened to their friends. So that might be an approach you could use with the radio station. But, you know, once you've got those three things working for you, where you develop the intrigue, there's four things that you want to do, you know, when you have a web presence. One is intrigue. The other is an inform. The other is to impress. And then hopefully the last one would be inspire.
How handy that they all start with an I.
You like
that?
Boy, that
was lucky.
That was not lucky. One of the things that's really important when you're trying to explain a concept is to have a framework.
Yeah.
And if they all start with the same letter, it makes it really easy for people to remember.
So the 4I, this is the 4I program?
It's the 4I program. But, yeah, so the intrigue has got to be the logo, the name, and the tagline. That gets them intrigued enough that they go click on your website. But then as far as the informing, it's, you know, our brains, back from the time that we were in caves, are wired for movement. And it's because of the saber-toothed tiger coming through the grass. You know, survival depended on the fact that we could identify a movement. Is this dangerous? Is this good? Kind of thing. So what's working now on websites is video. Is that on your website, you need to have a video. Generally of somebody like Stone or Lee.
Just Stone.
That is sitting there saying, "Hey, you know, you need, you know, what," and whatever you'd want to say. But it's really important to have a video on your website because if you look at the big gorilla in the room, which is Google, you know, Google owns YouTube. Okay,
and that's probably a coincidence that video is important then.
B- Bingo. you crack the code. You know, we don't know what's in the algorithm for Google on the first page, and they change it all the time, but I can guarantee you that if you've got some videos on YouTube, and if the video on your website happens to be a YouTube video,
right,
that's definitely going to help.
Okay. So how did you make this pivot in your business to move to more of the branding side from the patent side?
Well, I think it's called malnutrition. I mean, it's where you start. Is that in order to, you know, increase the number of customers coming through the door, it's like, well, what's working now?
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to have a 2003 website that was basically a static brochure.
Right.
And it got some results, you know, mainly because of third-person referrals.
Right.
But it was pretty boring, okay? And that's when I learned, well, what are people doing now?
Right.
And that's when I learned about video. I've always been a student of how the brain works. How do people make decisions?
Right.
And so it's like, okay, you got to have a video there. And it's not just any old video. People that come to your website usually have a problem that they want solved.
Sure.
And if you use results in advance where you actually help them solve their problem, on my website, it starts off with a video saying, I'm assuming somebody coming to my site, you know, wants a patent. They've come up with an idea.
Yes, that's it.
But they don't have a clue what patent is.
Right.
Sometimes people mistake patents with trademarks, but they need some information. And so the video that I have on there is, okay, here's the first steps when you have an idea.
Right.
You know, you need to find out, number one, you know, is it already in the marketplace?
Right. So that can weed out a bunch, because you don't want to have a million conversations with people that right. are not ready to have a conversation
right.
with you.
What I used to do is whenever somebody would contact me, I would go meet with them, and then I would find out that what they had come up with the idea already existed.
Right.
Or had already been patented.
Right.
Or it just really didn't have the legs to be a successful invention.
Right.
But I would waste my time and theirs
right.
going to visit them. So this is a pre-screening.
Right. And then didn't you have at one point, I don't know if you still have it, that questionnaire that gives them like 42 points or 42 questions?
It's 41 questions.
41 questions.
Right. Yeah, what I've done is I've recognized that. The video, number one, says here's the three things you need to do.
Right.
And if go back to the website. I mean, they're sitting there at the website watching the video. Go over to where it says step one. Click on step one.
Right.
And that sends them an email that tells them exactly how to do their own informal product search, patent search, and the 41 questions.
So there's a way that you can, that way you'll weed out probably 80% of the people that are not the right fit.
Yeah, anywhere from 50 to 80
right.
of the people. Because I get a message letting me know somebody's requested that step one.
Right.
And about less than half of the people that go to step one ever go to the button that says step two, request a free consultation.
But right. I'll tell you what, I bet 100% feel served, because here I am, 9:30, 10 o'clock on a Sunday evening. I've just invented my wrapping table, which we'll tell you about here in just a moment. It may okay. very well deserve a patent.
Okay.
It's 9:30, 10 o'clock. I go and I watch. This is not a 10, 15, 20-minute video probably, right? It's kind of a brief.
It's very short. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just something to give me a little overview and then take me down to the next step. But there's a lot that I can do to stimulate my thinking, challenge my thinking, get informed.
Right.
And so I'm still served, even if what I'm being served with is, hey, Stone, you really need to rethink this thing, or you've got some other things you need to do before it makes sense to get together with Ron.
That's it.
That's
exactly.
fantastic.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, the key thing is that you want to help them solve their problem. And if they, you know, I had a call one time from somebody that I knew from the Inventors Club. They said, quick, Ron, I need a patent. I'm like, time out.
A quick patent?
No, it's like, quick, I need one.
Oh, like I thought there was like a drive-through service.
No. Yeah. And I said, time out. I said, what have you invented? She said, well, it's an electric car jack. You know, you plug it into your cigarette lighter, you put it underneath the car, it raises the car, and you don't have to break your back, you know, raising the car when you got a flat tire.
Right.
I said, I've never, you know, searched that area, but my intuition tells me that's already been done.
Right.
I said, go to google.com/products. Type in electric car jack and let me know what you find. She called me back in less than 5 minutes saying, you're right, it's already been done. I'm like, good, go invent something else.
Right.
Okay, it's really important to do your own free research.
Yeah? Right.
Because, you know, if she'd missed theirs, she would have gone to google.com/patents to see if it had been patented, but it's not in the marketplace.
Right.
That's the steps.
So now, so in your business, you were helping with patents, and I believe that you were always, when you were serving your clients in the patent world, it was always patents and more. That wasn't an accident either. That was because you wanted to be seen as a connector and being a person that can help them in a variety of ways.
That's right. It's right. The more part was the connections of people that do stuff I don't do.
Right. So now the more part is now including a branding service?
That's correct. Yeah, to give them guidance on exactly, you know. Plus, I've got alliances with people that do trademarks.
Uh huh.
But yeah, the more part now is including branding.
So you're not involved in the trademark. You send that out to somebody who's an expert in trademarking.
That's correct.
So what kind of mistakes does that staunch do-it-yourselfer, I can get it done by myself, I'm going to save $100 here, $50 here, what kind of mistakes does that person make if they don't take advantage of some expert counsel from people like you or the expert guy on the trademark thing? What are some traps they can fall into?
Well, some of the traps has to do with what I call delayed intelligence.
Boy, you could run for office. I like that. Say more about that.
Is that if you don't investigate things, like we were talking about entrepreneur
right
at the beginning, you know, if you don't find out at the beginning that that's already a registered trademark, you don't find out until later when you get the cease and desist letter.
Right. Well, in your head, you're thinking, well, entrepreneur is just a word in the dictionary. How could they possibly have trademarked a word that's in the dictionary?
Right.
But
right.
Guess what? They did.
they did. Yeah, they pretty much got it. Yeah, I think there was another client of mine that thought that the word that they came up with, I think it was just speed, was the word. And it turned out that there's a company that pretty much has the word speed locked up mm-hmm. in a particular segment of the industry.
Right.
Because, you know, trademarks are by class.
Right. Because that's why there can be Delta Airlines and Delta Faucets.
That's right. It's by class. But the particular class they wanted, that word was locked down every way that you can imagine. And they're mm-hmm. like, well, okay, let's say quick and fast instead of speed, okay?
Right.
But, yeah, that's the problem, Stone, is that people find out later, you know, if they don't do their homework, that the trademark was taken or even that something's already patented if they didn't, you know, have a good patent search done. So they can spend a whole lot of money and waste it, but it's years later that they find out. You know, one of the companies here in town is just bought out by Cisco was the, come on, brain, trying to remember.
So they had a patent or they had a trademark?
It was a trademark, and it's Atlanta. Come on. They're out there in Duluth. It'll come to me. But the name of their company, they found out, they started off, and it was called Scientific Associates.
Right.
Okay. That was their first name. And they had their business cards printed up. They had their letterhead, everything. And then as soon as they opened up shop, they get this letter from the real Scientific Associates saying, that's our trademark, you can't use it. And they're like, well, we're here in Atlanta, why don't we call it Scientific Atlanta? Because they already had the logo of S.A.
S.A., so they just picked another A
nice
word.
But yeah, I heard that from one of the founders. It's like they had to change their name at the beginning, and how lucky that Scientific Associates became Scientific Atlanta.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
But they tossed some money that they didn't have at the beginning. Because it was five engineers put in $500 to start Scientific Atlanta. And if they'd done some research, they could have saved that money.
So what does an engagement with you look like? Can you kind of walk us through your engagement cycle?
Yeah, it begins with people going to the website, mm-hmm. watching the video, doing their own research. And then they fill out what's known as an invention disclosure. And they ask for the free consultation. And from there, you know, we get together either in person or, you know, by phone or by Skype, depending on whether they're in California. I mean, I've got one client from the Ukraine, you know, which was a big time difference there.
Sure.
Yeah. And we look at their invention. The first thing is to have a professional prior art search done and to find out, can you get a patent? And I also walk them through the financial parts of patents is, you know, is it really going to be worth your while? It's like, do you have a 1-to-5 ratio? If it costs $1 to make, can you sell it for $5 or more? You know, everything you see on television for $19.99, just divide that by 5. That's how much it costs to produce it.
So even if you can get a patent, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should.
Right. Yeah, I had one client that had an invention as big as this table we're looking at, made out of cast iron. It was for servicing the carts that trim the greens, you know, on golf courses.
Right.
And I'm like, what's it cost to make this? And he says, about $500. I said, well, what are you going to sell it for? He says, about $1,000. I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. I said, how are you going to ship this? I mean, this thing is heavy.
Okay? Right.
I mean, he was in the industry. It solved a problem, but the numbers didn't work.
Right.
Yeah. I tell people, if you're looking for the characteristics of an ideal invention, is it small? Is it made out of an inexpensive material? Does it address a very large market? And, you know, does it have those characters? You know, is the perceived value at least five times what right. it's going to cost you to make it? That, because it's risky taking some into the market.
And even the patent process can be expensive. I know it's much less expensive with you than it would be. A lot of people will just hire an attorney.
Right.
And that price for that same service that you provide is a multiple, probably five or more.
it is definitely more, because a lot of times with attorneys, you're paying for their address.
Right, their nice fancy office.
Their secretary, the teakwood furniture, all that.
Yeah. Well, and they may or may not care, like Ron does, if it's actually a good idea. If it's patentable, there may be. They may just say, look, this is what I do. Yes, it's patentable. I've done your search. Here's your bill, right?
That's correct, yeah. Most, you know, there's always exceptions, but most folks don't look at the business part. They'll just say, you know, I do patents. You want
right.
a patent? I can do that.
Right.
And they don't look at, you know, are you going to make any money?
Right.
And I like my clients to be making money because it makes me look good if sure. I've got successful clients.
Right. So now that you've expanded into the branding side, how has that impacted your business?
It's kind of an adjunct of mm-hmm. more of the total package. It's getting them to think, because most inventors come in with just raw excitement.
Right.
And I try to tone that down a little bit, and because you need the excitement. You need the energy.
Absolutely.
But it's like, let's think this through.
Okay? Right.
Because, in addition to the trademarks and all, I try to get people to think about their product line. It's like, okay, this is another thing with most patent attorneys. They'll patent what has been invented. And they won't say, ask the inventor to think through
the next thing.
What's going to be the next one, and what's going to be the next
right.
one?
So how can we protect that maybe in the first one rather than having
That's
five
right.
different patents?
That's right. Because if you can put your entire product sequence into one,
right?
Okay, it's going to save you a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of money. But, yeah, with the trademarks and the taglines, I'm just trying to get them thinking about their total business.
Right.
Of, you know, how are you going to make a presence in the marketplace? You know, your website's got to have that video. You know, you've got to explain, you know, what the problem is that your product solves, and then give them a way to engage with continuing the relationship. Because once you start the relationship with people, if they've opted in to get your free report to get further information, then you've got their name and their email address, and every month you can put them on a sequence
right.
where you give them more value and more value.
And
more
slowly
value.
Win them over.
And hopefully, you know, you're going to win them over.
Right.
And if you don't win them over to become a client, they're going to receive so much value from you that they'll tell their friends, like,
right.
oh, this guy really helped me a lot. I didn't
right.
go with him as, you know, I never bought his stuff. But
he knows what he's talking about.
He's a good guy. He can be helpful. Okay, and you'll get a referral that way.
Now, do you have a go-to resource or two that you use for some of these services, like the video or like getting together and thinking through taglines? Or are you facilitating that
conversation? I'm the facilitator, plus I have folks out in Portland and all like that, that branding is what they do.
And
copywriting is what they do. So I'll end up, you know, engaging them.
That's the and more part of his business.
Well,
and
it's really important, because it's one thing to say, Stone, you need a video. It's Stone, you need a video, and here's who we're going to work with and how and why we're going to do that. That's a lot more valuable
right.
to me than just Stone, you need a video.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell folks, you know, basically the first thing to do is just go get a Macintosh computer.
Right.
It is so easy to do video and upload it to YouTube. I mean, it's just point and click kind of thing. And if you look at this video here, that's on Patents and More website, you'll see that was done in my office. And when I hand things off, my wife's on the other side, outside the camera range, picking things up. But it's just really simple to do.
Well, right. And lighting is important. If you're not particularly attractive, you got to get the lighting right. Is that right?
Yeah, and then, you know, I do have a face for radio, so I know about not being attractive. But, yeah, I did go and buy the lighting kit and bounced it off mm-hmm. the ceiling and all
right.
of that to make me look like I wasn't, you know, death warmed over anything.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, What's your website?
Yeah, it's www.patentsandmore.com.
And then that'll have information about patents, obviously, and all this branding stuff and all the other stuff
that's
you provide,
correct.
Right?
That's correct. That's all there.
Well, thanks so much for coming back and visiting with us, man. I'm excited for you.
Well, this is an exciting time to be alive. That's for sure.
Things are happening fast-paced nowadays.
Yes, they are.
How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Be glad to.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, we have with Brown & Company Jewelers a graduate gemologist, Miss Amy Green. How you doing?
Good morning. Doing well.
Anything you want to patent?
My brain is racing, but I know who to go to when I'm ready.
Exactly.
So is this a good time of year for the jewelry business, yeah?
This is our season. So, yes, we are working hard every day, and we're open every day until Christmas Day, and then it's a big season for us. So, yes.
So now, I've always wondered. I am married, so I went through the engagement process, and I was fascinated by the whole diamond, like what makes one diamond nicer, fancier than another diamond, and the prices are dramatically different. How informed is a typical consumer in this area?
Well, actually, you know, the consumer is so educated now. There's so many resources online for someone to start shopping and really start to learn a lot about the products. And typically what I see is when a client comes in, they come in and they've already learned a lot. They just have a few of the pieces that they kind of want to put together while looking at diamonds and really applying that information that they've learned online. So actually, I would say it's a very educated consumer now.
Now, are diamonds really that different? Like, you know, like there's some of them are $100, the same thing, the same size could be $10,000.
Absolutely.
Like, can you tell with your naked eye, like a $100 diamond from a $10,000 diamond?
I can.
Well, you're a gemologist. You better be able to.
As a woman and a gemologist, I can. Yes, absolutely. But there are these minute characteristics that definitely dramatically change a diamond's value from one to another.
What about the fake diamonds?
Yes, we can definitely tell. They feel different on the finger, and
is it
and
a
they
weight thing?
They
weigh differently.
I just say, as a woman, when I'm putting on diamonds, real diamonds excite me a lot more than anything unnatural would.
So, when a person's coming into Brown & Company Jewelers, they're coming in there in their head. They're not looking for an exact thing, right? They're looking for something to please their wife, typically, right?
It's a bit of a mix. I would definitely say, as far as like specifically to engagement rings, some come in and they have a picture. This is exactly what I want.
Right. Like I knew my wife wanted a pear-shaped diamond. That's all I needed to know. I mean, I thought I needed to.
Yes. So some come in, but, you know, a lot come in and they don't necessarily, they just want something that she is going to be so proud of.
Right.
And so excited when she sees it that her eyes light up and yes, he, you know, hit a home run. So I have a bit of a mix. Some definitely know exactly what they want. And when it comes to a diamond, they know the exact characteristics, and others just want something that they know is going to have a lot of sparkle and perform really well on her finger and make her extremely happy.
Perform extremely well on her finger. What is going on in this?
Well, no, there's a lot. You have to teach people how to buy a diamond. This is not something that people do every day. They may buy one or two for their
right,
wife.
Like for you, how
one
many?
One or two for their girlfriend, and that's
right.
It.
That's six or right? Seven in their lifetime.
Exactly.
Right?
So is there some kind of rule of thumb that some of us have been exposed to? Or you hear on a commercial or something, X amount of your monthly salary or 2 months salary, or I don't know. Is there anything to that, or was that just marketing?
You know, I definitely, as far as engagement rings, they do recommend to actually 3 months salary. Of course, it's kind of growing along with everything
else.
It's
not much of a rock around here, I'm just so you know.
But I think no matter what the budget is, you know, you want to get something that's beautiful because, you know, this particular ring is going to get more wear than any car that you'll buy.
Right.
And you know, you want it to sparkle and you don't want it to have any characteristics that she's looking at and regretting or that you're regretting on her finger down the road. So you want to invest, you know, as much money into whatever you a beautiful quality diamond.
Well, how much do you value the relationship, really?
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot to talk about here.
Now, are there trends in this? Does it change? Like, because like diamonds seem like classic items.
There definitely are trends. And what I'm seeing now is a throwback to very classic styles, classic micro pave halos and beautiful solitaires, round brilliant cut diamonds. We have a designer right now, Ratani, that is very popular, and they do a beautiful job. Everything's domestically made and just really beautiful, feminine, delicate features, and they've done a great job with that.
But isn't this an incredibly competitive arena? I mean, there are a lot of jewelry stores right here, and probably in the Dunwoody, Sandy Springs area, much less entire Metro Atlanta area, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it can be overwhelming to the consumer.
Yeah,
that there's so much information out there and so many places that you can go to purchase it, and it's not. Going back to the car reference, like buying a car, every single diamond, it's natural. It's different. It has a different characteristic. So I think that it can be a little stressful. But
has the diamond industry been impacted by the online world? It seems like that online, I'd be really nervous.
Buy diamonds online?
No, that's what I'm saying. It may not have been.
I see. Yeah.
Actually, there's definitely been a lot of online impact, and you can purchase diamonds online.
Really? I'd be really nervous. It's one thing buying an ebook.
I've done a lot of diamond buying in my time, and I don't buy them sight unseen. I can say that. But yes, it has definitely been impacted.
Wow.
That
takes a special person. You better have a good website, Ron, with a lot of integrity.
No kidding.
To pull off a diamond sale online.
So what kind of things does a gemologist learn? Because I'm sure there's a great deal to it.
Have you ever hit the diamond with that little mallet?
and crushed it right in front of the girlfriend? That's not nice.
You know how to do that?
Yes. You don't. Mm-hmm. I actually have not personally hit it. I definitely leave that to, seasoned professionals.
Have you ever
professionals.
Seen it happen?
I have seen it happen.
Wow, that must be nerve wracking.
I think that they even hold their breath. But no, it's really, it's an interesting process to see these cutters really do it, and they really take a lot of pride in it. And
what was it like? Tell me. To me, that seems so nerve-wracking because the diamond is worth a ton of money, and they have to just hit it exactly right or else it's ruined, right?
Exactly. Every diamond has, certain growth patterns that you have to hit it right on a specific spot in order to hit it.
So you were watching and the guy's got a microscope or something? How does it happen?
I have seen it, and it's not necessarily a microscope. It was a little bit larger piece of rough diamond. But there's newer technologies now where it's actually versus this cleaver kind of motion. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
the diamond.
I was going to ask, can you cut
they
it with a laser?
Laser,
or something?
Yes.
Wow.
So but you still got to dial it in right.
You still want to make sure that you're programmed right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to make sure that machine is calibrated.
And you don't want Saul pulling a prank on you when right. you go out for a sandwich and he moves your dial two notches over.
No.
What's a diamond look like when it's uncut?
When a diamond's uncut, it's interesting. It's actually a rough diamond. If you took two pyramids and kind of stacked them on top of each other, that's what it looks like. It's actually not – you don't have a lot of brilliance and sparkle to it.
But it doesn't look like a rock. It's like crystal. It's still
like a very dull crystal.
And then you can see it and go, man, this thing's beautiful. Like you can see within it.
I think it takes a very specially trained eye. I can help identify a lot of characteristics and color of diamonds. I am not a cutter by any means, so to be able to look into a piece of crystal rough, I could not tell you what would come of that as far as carat sizes and shapes.
Right.
But it's definitely a learned acquired
it's
talent.
Fascinating.
Well, and there's diamonds, but there's also all the colored stones that are absolutely gorgeous, in my mm-hmm. opinion. They're right. blue and red and green. And
does that take a different skill to cut those?
Not necessarily, but you want to always maximize any rough that you have to its maximum beauty. So I think it's a high pressure job.
I think so. Now at Brown and Company, you guys do all, not just diamonds, right?
No, we try to be a little bit of everything in the trade. So we deal with a lot of designers. We carry David Yurman, John Hardy, a lot of high-end Swiss watches, Rolex, Breitling. We also do bridal. So, there's a lot of places that you can go in Atlanta for fine watches, diamonds, designer jewelry. We try to do it all in addition to custom and, you know, repair jewelry, watch batteries as well. So try to be a one-stop
shop. How's the watch business? Like, with everybody having cell phones now, or don't less people have watches?
No.
No?
I don't. Yeah, it's actually doing quite well. And
really?
Is the industry, yes. Fine Swiss timepieces have actually increased. They've seen growth, so...
I think Timex might have suffered, but not Breitling, Rolex, those guys.
But the fancy watches, there's always a place as a status symbol.
I think, yeah. And, you know, I mean, nothing feels good about, you know, you buying yourself a Timex when you, you know, hit that
swatch?
Big promotion.
Not a swatch.
Nothing against Timex. It's a great watch. It's absolutely a great
watch. So can
piece,
I go to Brown and Company and get a Timex?
You know, it's actually, I would recommend the watch, but I cannot sell that to you. I don't have it. I don't have it in stock.
I would make that part of my marketing. But you will not find a Timex here.
But that's a very specialized interaction, too, a jewelry store, because they are coming to you. They're walking in. You've done great promotion or whatever to get them to you, right? So You're there. You're behind the counter. They're coming to you. There's probably some sort of structured process for having that conversation and guiding them to an informed decision. You can't just willy-nilly, because they don't know what they need and want, really, right?
Well, I think the biggest thing about, you know, I would say that we probably don't have a lot of structure. We are still a family business. But, you know, when it comes to the salespeople, our theory is get to know the person, get to know their personality, ask them questions, and try on. It's a lot like clothes. You like the way it looks. You like the way it fits. You like the way it feels. So that's what I kind of encourage the consumer to do. Well, let's shop. Let's try it on. Let's see how it feels. Trust your eye. What do you like? So, you know, and once they start to become interested in a certain product, of course, there's so many details that I can overwhelm them with about that product. but for the most part, yeah, it's just a let's kind of shop attitude.
You must always be dealing with people in a good mood. I mean, people in a bad mood don't
go to the
jewelry store.
They're not walking in a jewelry store.
It is a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous business to be in. I'm very blessed. I was actually born into the business. My father started Brown & Company. This is our 39th holiday season.
So you're
season.
Green and he's brown? How did that happen?
Yes. yes. I was Amy Brown and I am now Amy Green. So
that's funny.
See, again, this would be part of my marketing.
That should be our new tagline or something. Come find your color at Brown & Company.
Save some green with brown.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm very blessed to be born into the business, but it's happy. I mean, it's great. Everyone every day is excited. I helped a wonderful woman last week, and, you know, her mother had passed away and left her this ring. And she had decided to take her engagement ring and incorporate these diamonds from her mother's ring. And we were able to custom design this. And, I mean, it was wonderful. She was hugging everyone. We had the jeweler out on the floor who had made the ring and the guy who had created a wax. It's a fun business, I have to say.
I would think that, because you're around their most meaningful moments in people's lives.
Absolutely.
Like in the milestones. So, I mean, that must be
that
really...
That has possibility, meaningful moments. I think we're going to figure something out for you guys. You come to work at Business Radio X, you get a t-shirt and a hat. So you come to work at Brown Company, you got to have jewelry. Right?
Now, we have like this bowl of candy. They have like a bowl of like rings and stuff.
Yes. But don't you need to be wearing nice jewelry if you're going to sell nice jewelry?
I completely agree with you. And this is something that I've been working on for years that, you know, I need to represent very well and that they should just... Hand it to me.
How has the We Buy Gold movement impacted your business? Like, you know how like at every corner there's some guy spinning a sign that's saying We Buy Gold?
Absolutely. You know, it hasn't really impacted our business. But we have kind of we've started purchasing gold more as a service because we felt
that. So you do that. Well, at least if I went to you, I'd feel like that you're not ripping me off as opposed to the guy on the corner spinning a sign.
Well, and you know, we kind of, with anyone in our community, we want to offer any service that they ask for. So, yes, we have definitely gone into the We Buy Gold.
But are you doing, is there a part of that that's like you were just saying where you're kind of recycling or reusing a memento and then making a new one?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, I think in especially in the past few years, a lot of people haven't felt very, didn't feel like they should go out and buy new. So a lot of what we've had is people come in and they feel much better when they trade in or when they can, you know, take a lot of old pieces that they haven't worn in years and get a new piece. And I think that that's helped a little bit more justify their purchases in a difficult economic time.
What was it like for your husband to buy you an engagement ring?
Oh, ouch.
Can you imagine? I would like to get him in here to talk about this experience.
I think it was a little stressful. He did propose, and about 10 minutes later, he said, I'm so glad that that's over.
Why don't you take care of this part of this? Yeah. How did that must have been impossible.
That would have been nerve-wracking.
I know. Imagine how many nights he was up worrying about this.
Yes, he had to ask my father for permission and then, in addition, say, will you sell me a ring as well?
He had to buy it from her.
But these older rings that people are trading in, as a general rule, these things don't depreciate in value much, if at all, right? I mean, typically these pieces are getting worth more, yeah?
As far as diamonds, yes, absolutely. They have appreciated. But at the same time, you know, it's always difficult because it's what people are interested in, what's selling now.
Right.
So we can only purchase something if we have a market where the consumer is buying it now. So there's a lot of gold content for jewelry that has absolutely appreciated. I mean, most people are getting what they paid for an item, you know, in 1980, a gold necklace, and they can get almost the gold value out of that. But as far as just selling diamonds back, it kind of depends on what's selling in the market.
And then so the holidays, people get engaged a lot, like this is, or is it like Valentine's Day? When's the big engagement?
We see a lot of engagements around the holidays. We do. I think it has something to do with, you know, you're kind of reflecting on the past year and you're spending a lot of time with family and friends and you're looking forward to the next year and who do you want to spend with the next years with and celebrate the relationship with your friends and family. So we see a lot of holiday proposals.
And what's the protocol? You're supposed to have the ring in hand when you engage, which is not what happened with me, right. But I was just poor, right?
Don't you just point them to a website? Is that how you do it? Yeah.
As far as when you're shopping, tell them to go online and pick out a
style. Here, I got a Groupon. That's how you do that. That wouldn't fly, I don't think.
I think that they actually like to have a little bit more of a story of the guy, you know, putting some a little more thought into it.
He gave me a QR code for a Groupon. It was awesome. No, so but you guys have an online presence, right? That's part of your business now.
We do. We do.
Sure, when your dad started, was it your dad or your grandfather?
It was actually my father. It's kind of an American entrepreneur story. Mm-hmm. I love this story. He was 22, and had a small loan from his father. And in Roswell, Georgia, decided to open up a jewelry store. And this holiday is our 39th year.
Wow.
So through a lot of hard work. And
how did he pick jewelry as opposed to a million other businesses he could open up?
He had worked a summer at Bennett's, which was a fine jeweler in Atlanta years ago, and thought that he could do it after working a summer there.
And how old was he?
22.
He was 22?
He was 22 years old.
And he's like, how hard is this?
I could do this.
Right.
You know. So he went out, he started, he you know, worked his face off and really kind of grew up with the community around him and you know, we've been blessed. This is almost our 40th year, so.
And then you got involved right after when you were young too?
I have always been involved. As I said, it's a family affair. So I was gift wrapping
So like when you were 10 years old, you were doing
absolutely
sweeping the floor?
Yeah, when I was 7 years old, I can distinctly remember gift wrapping and making bows during the holiday break. And after that, I've always worked there after school. I went to University of Georgia and for my undergrad, and then I went to gemology school after that. That was a very difficult program of looking at gemstones and diamonds for six
where,
months
where is
straight.
The gem? Is they have that here in Georgia, or you have to go somewhere else for that?
You have to. There, if you want to go, you can do it through an online program. But I chose to go on campus. It was a struggle because my on campus experience was in Italy for a year.
You really should.
It was horrific, but somebody really had to do it. So. I volunteered myself. My younger sister is also a graduate gemologist, and she went to the headquarters. It's actually GIA, Gemological Institute of America, in Carlsbad, California. So.
And so what's the curriculum like there? What happens? What's a day? There's fraternities and sororities.
it's very small, but you know, this is actually the world's most recognized establishment, the Gemological Institute of America. So these gem certificates actually are the most accredited throughout the world. So it's a very international program. But yes, you look at gemstones all day and you talk to people from all around the world, all different aspects of the business. It's recommended. It's recommended. It was fun.
So then you came back home and then you were immersed yourself in the business, or did you work for another jeweler just to learn how, you know, some family businesses, they send the kids out to other companies to see how they do things.
Absolutely. Yes, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of independent jewelers that we've become friends with in the country, and a lot of the children kind of travel around to different ones. But no, I fully immersed myself. I started working and just kind of forgot to try to work somewhere else. As I said, it's a really fun business, and you just get very addicted to it. I'm very passionate about it and really enjoy it. So
what's your vision for it? I mean, are you at some point taking it over, or is this something that, because most family businesses, they don't last multiple generations here in America.
Absolutely. I think we operate every day. We operate to make it the best business that it can be. And that's whether I decide to step into that role is not really something in my mind right now. Of course we've had discussions of things like this, but our main goal is just to make it the best business to the community that it can be every day. So,
But you're having to adapt to the ever-changing marketplace. I mean, you've added this gold thing. Online is probably a lot more than it was, I'm sure, 10 years ago.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the benefit of being a small business is that, we're agile. We're able to adapt. Every day we get out there and we try to deliver the best product, the best services to the customer. We're not perfect, but we work really hard. So that's something that
there's your tagline.
So it's been interesting. There's a lot of new initiatives. For example, we have this company Ritani that has started this whole new initiative as far as a click and brick that we've partnered with. And
what does a click and brick mean?
So Ritani has recognized that online shopping for diamonds specifically, every consumer is starting online. Everyone's starting the education online. But they're making the majority of their purchases in store. So what they have done is really revolutionized the process where you can pick out your diamond and you're sending up to 2 rings online. You don't have to buy them. You can have them sent to your local Brown Company and Jewelers. We're one of 6 independent stores in the country. You can preview them there with a graduate gemologist and look at them. You don't have to buy them, but you can see it in person. And if you love one, then at that time you can purchase it.
Nice.
So you can kind of build it online and then it's created in the store? Or?
It's actually created at Ritani and then it's sent to Brown & Company.
Wow.
And at the same time, of course, you can preview all the stuff that Brown & Company has as well. But it's really revolutionary.
It sounds like there's like so the partnering with kind of artisans, and then it's being delivered at the store level.
Yes. Well, Ritani has always been a bridal manufacturer, so they've been a designer. They do these beautiful settings, and then they've partnered with diamond cutters, and so now they have sell loose diamonds through their website in addition to these beautiful Ritani mountings.
That's fantastic. That's outstanding.
That's great.
So let's make sure our listeners know how to get to you guys and have a chance to have a conversation with you and look at some of these gorgeous pieces.
Absolutely. You can find us, and I'm there every day, in Buckhead and in Roswell. You can go to our website, www.brownjewelers.com. And we look forward to seeing everyone, and happy holiday shopping.
Fantastic. So did you learn anything about jewelry, Lee?
Yeah, it's great.
I hope Abby wasn't listening, because I bet you're going to go out this afternoon.
Exactly.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer Kevin Finn, and our guests this morning, Ron Reardon and Amy Green, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.